thing we spoke of in the previous verse, of how seeing Him, seeing the Lord, is the perfection of life, and this is made possible by penance. Here also, Prabhupada is given a translation of submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance. Here, in the previous verse, Lord Krishna was speaking of the ultimate benediction, is to see Krishna. And here he says, the highest perfectional ingenuity, manishita, the topmost intellectual achievement, is to see the Lord's abode. This is, it means to see the Lord means to see the Lord's abode, and vice versa. There's no king without a kingdom. There's no meaning to a king without a kingdom, and there's no meaning to a kingdom without a king. But that suggests also that it's not just a matter of seeing the Lord, but going back home, back to Godhead, entering into His abode. Many people ask, have you seen God? Or they say, well, I saw Krishna. Krishna came in my dream, or whatever. So that may be, but really seeing Krishna is to enter into His abode and go back to Godhead. That is the perfectional stage of life. So that is possible. Here we have avalokanam, seen by actual experience, upashrutya, hearing. Hearing, this word upashrutya gives the suggestion, as Prabhupada said, by submissive hearing, by hearing from authority. This is the way to see. How should we see? People say, I want to see God. But seeing with the eyes, that's actually a very inferior way of seeing. Simply seeing with the eyes. Brahmana should see through Shastra, not simply with the eye. Brahmana sees with the eye of Shastra. King, he sees with his ministers and spies. He has to see everything that's going on in the kingdom. So his ministers advise him, because the ministers, they're seeing through Shastra. And actually what's going on in the kingdom, he has to find out through his spies. The cow sees through the nose, simply looking, smelling, looking. Or is there something to eat? And an ordinary inferior person simply sees with the eye. This is Chanakya Sloka. I don't know in Sanskrit. He's given this idea. A Brahmana, an intelligent person, manishinam, this word you'll find. It's coming in this verse, it comes in many verses in Bhagavatam. Manishinam means a person of discrimination, a person who uses his intelligence. He's not simply got some intelligence, but is exercising his intelligence. But he doesn't rely simply on seeing to see, not simply on his eyes. You say, I've seen God. What is the value of your sin if you don't serve God? The Shastra will always emphasize on serving God more than seeing God. And then by serving, then certainly seeing will be there. But service is more important. There's no particular use to even to seeing God unless you're prepared to serve Him. Hiranyakashipu also had a good close-up view of God. But he was completely in the wrong mood of seeing. But seeing means, in our conditioned stage, we should see everything. Seeing God, that's a very high achievement. We have to see what is the whole cosmic situation, what is our relationship with it. What is our relationship with it? We don't have any relationship with it. That's to be understood. Our relationship is with Krishna. But to see this and understand this, that we have to learn from Shastra. Seen through the eye of Shastra. Everything should be seen through the eye of Shastra. Once Prabhupada was walking with his disciples in a park, and they saw under a tree that so many bird droppings were there. The Prabhupada asked his disciples, what does this mean? Bird passing through. What does it mean? What does it mean? Is it Should we look at those bird droppings? Is there some mystical system of finding out, just like people look in tea leaves in a cup? Do we have that system here in India? There's something in the West, some gypsy looks in the tea leaves in the bottom of a cup, and they say, well, this means that tomorrow at 2:30, a gang of wild pigs will invade your home, or something like this. They predict the future. So they're looking at the bird droppings, maybe the formation has got some mystic significance. Prabhupada said, what this means is that the bird is attached. He's coming to the same place every day for passage through. He's attached. So his Prabhupada wasn't simply seeing some bird droppings, but he was seeing through the eye of Shastra. In everything there is the eye of Shastra. How we see, how people are acting, how we are acting, how people are thinking. Krishna has elaborately given a description in Bhagavad Gita of the symptoms of the modes of material nature, so that we can understand the effects of the modes of nature. We see that someone, he may do something, why? How is that? In which mode of nature is he working? Krishna has elaborately described. So a person in the mode of goodness or a brahmana, he sees with knowledge. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam, from the mode of goodness and knowledge. Because that knowledge is not simply by being in the mode of goodness, but one of the symptoms of the mode of goodness is also studying Shastra. So one should see through Shastra. We want to see God. How will we see God? Well, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita how to see Him in this material world. Rasohamapsu kauntaya prabhasmi shashi surya pranava sarvavedeshu shabdate paurushangasha. You can see me, Krishna says, in the sunlight, the moonlight, in the sound, whatever sound, that's the representation of Krishna. Any ability you see in a person, that is a representation of Krishna. The Omkar in the Vedic mantra is representation of Krishna. And the taste of water. Water is the medium by which we can taste. If the tongue is completely dry, you can't taste anything. There has to be some water. The tongue is called it. Rasana, that's one word for tongue, that experiences the taste that has to be through the water. So we can see Krishna, we can see God in material nature by seeing through Shastra. Brahmana sees through Shastra. That's why even in the great disturbance, someone should not be disturbed, because you know, just like people are thinking, will there be India-Pakistan war? Always people, from time to time it becomes more acute, the tension, and then it becomes less acute, and then more acute, and they're worrying, will there be a war? What shall we do? But in this material world, there's always something. You see the whole history of India. It's just like, what is the history of India? And if you study in school, what they'll teach is just one war after another, just fighting all the time. That's always the, especially in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means Kalaha Yuga, the age of quarrel. Kali means quarrel. So you may think so many horrible things may happen, what shall I do? Well, that's the material world. One who sees through the eye of Shastra understands that these things, if it happens, it happens. It's unavoidable. Because he sees through the eye of Shastra, a learned person. He doesn't just see the immediate what's going on, but he sees cause and effect as understood through Shastra. The knowledge, what is knowledge? Knowledge, basically, knowledge means facts and figures. That's one thing. But then further is to understand why these facts and figures are thus arranged. The science means to see why does an apple fall from the tree and hit Isaac Newton on the head, maybe. Folk story. I don't know if that's a scientific story. Why? Why does it fall? Why doesn't it go up? If an apple is to come off a tree, why doesn't it go up and do a few circles and then travel a kilometer through the air and then come down? Why doesn't it simply fall straight? Science means to analyze. In history also, it's not simply facts, but they analyze why this happened, why was this going on. Not that it's the history they're studying, what is there to be? What is there to be known? It's simply that so many different people have fought wars. History means, basically, it's a history of war, mostly. All the different wars that are going on. And history? They say you should learn from history, but mostly history teaches us that no one ever learns anything from history. It's the main thing. Without studying history, you can learn that no one ever... Sometimes we want to analyze all the different faults. One of my godbrothers, who very expertly, in several books, written all the faults, especially of the leaders in ISKCON. So I told him that the situation you're writing about, already that's passed over. He was writing about over-authoritarian leadership. I told him that doesn't... That's passed away now. No one respects any authority now. So where's the over-authoritarian leadership? And he's telling me, no, but then in future the same thing will come again. It goes in cycles, so people will learn. They won't learn. One can learn if he learns from Shastra. That's why learning from Shastra is not simply a matter of reading the book, but one has to accept the discipline of being a disciple. Then he can learn. It's not so. This whole modern educational system, there's so many faults. The one basic fault is that they simply take knowledge as something you learn, but they don't teach submissiveness, character development by surrendering to a guru. So that knowledge, it simply becomes some mental confabulation that you have. You don't know how to use the knowledge because you're not directed how to submit, how to serve. Without that, there's no proper understanding anyway. That's why you see in the modern age, people have got so much knowledge. You'll find many learned people, but they don't know how to act or what is the purpose of life. The knowledge doesn't actually help them. They learn so many things, but it doesn't ultimately help them. They think, I have to get this knowledge to get a job, but even getting a job and all, it doesn't help them. They're not happy, nor their lives based on any higher principle. That's why one has to surrender to a guru. Otherwise, knowledge, the tendency is for knowledge to make one proud. And with knowledge, he starts to analyze. Just like we're saying, we can see through the eye of Shastra, analyze everything. Through Shastra. But they're analyzing, they've made psychology, science, sociology. They're analyzing through their speculative techniques. But it doesn't actually help them. Because they don't have the idea that one should develop one should become strong in character and understand who is God. So even Prabhupada himself writes in one purport in the Ishopanishad that the modern psychologists, they have some good insights into the workings of the mind. But ultimately they miss the point because they don't know that the mind is working on the background of the soul. And that the mind should be directed towards Krishna. Man mana, Krishna says, think of me, savai mana, Krishna, tadaravinda yoho. The mind of Maharaj Ambarish was first placed at the lotus feet of Krishna. So this they don't understand, so they become somewhat proud that we have analyzed the workings of the mind, but it doesn't ultimately help them. That's why one has to accept the discipline. Otherwise, knowledge without discipline, and discipline means not discipline simply for its own sake, but discipline so that one can be directed in the proper direction. Otherwise, that knowledge, it brings some kind of independence of thought. Brahmana is supposed to be independently thoughtful. But without being based on Shastra, then independently thoughtful and they end up with your Andy Warhols and you don't know, you see. Very degraded personality. There are so many of the modern age who recommend gross sense gratification. Ultimately, they come to just a gross sense gratification. They become very intellectual, they analyze the whole material world this way, that way, and the other, and they end up putting their linga into all different kinds of holes that it's not meant to go into. That's what material life is. It's simply a quest for sense gratification. So knowledge that is developed without being trained under a guru and without taking knowledge from Shastra, it simply ends up in more gross sense gratification. That's what happens. So that knowledge that brings, it's said that a brahmana, he's independently thoughtful. But we should understand that independent means, what is the limit of our independence? The jiva by nature is very much dependent, he's limited. So his independence is either to surrender to Krishna or not surrender to Krishna. So if he doesn't surrender to Krishna, he may be independently thoughtful, but he ends up advocating homosex, abortion, contraception, this sex, that sex, it's what it comes to, grossly materialistic. So he may think that we're very independent and we're making all our new ideas. This whole, they had the sexual revolution in the West after the Second World War, which is now fully, it's no longer any revolution. The revolution is successful. Divorce, homosexuality, abortion, all these things were thought very bad. But now they're accepted that women should go out and work and have jobs and be equal with men in all respects. That was not considered, now it's considered open and good. So women should be chaste and shy. All these values were there to a large extent in the West also. Now that's changed. They had a sexual revolution. So they're thinking, at that time they're thinking, we're bringing in all new ideas. We're very independently thoughtful. We're bringing in new ideas. There's nothing new. It's the oldest thing. Just like they say, the oldest profession is prostitution. Sometimes it's referred to as the oldest profession. As if it's a profession, like a doctor or a lawyer or something. So they're saying, well, it's something very new we've discovered. Independent way of thought. And what's new? It's just simply, that's going on since time immemorial. It's not new, it's just, yeah, it's just uncivilized, that's all. For a civilized person, this may be something new. But there's nothing inherently new about it. So that independence of thought, you may say, absolute, so in the material world, if you take absolute independence of thought, we don't want to follow anyone, we just think whatever we like. John Lennon, the great philosopher of the modern world, I don't believe in Jesus, I don't believe in Hitler, and I had a whole song going on about 20 minutes. Everything he didn't believe in. And the conclusion, I just believe in me. Yoko and me. Yoko is his wife's name, his second wife's name. Yoko and me, that's reality. So for all his independence, I reject Jesus, I reject Hitler, I reject the Bible, I reject the Yi King, I reject everything, and what do I end up, my wife? High philosophy, very high philosophy. This is reality. And reality he eventually got when he was 40 years old, someone shot him dead. So then we had to find out what is actually reality. Big, big philosophy. Another song he sang, considered a very wonderful song. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine a world in which there's no wars or armies and no religion too, one of his lines. Imagine how wonderful it would be if there's no religion in the world. So this is his independent thought. New way of thinking, no restriction, no wars, no armies, no countries, no one preaching to, of course he's preaching. No religion, no God. It's a normal demoniac idea, no God. How wonderful it would be. The only problem in this world, they think, is God. So no God, then everything will be nice. But they like to think they're independent controller. But unfortunately for them, there's death, which they cannot avoid. So they're thinking very independently and progressively, but then death comes, and then they find out actually they're under the control of the laws of nature. There is God. So independent thinking should not be just absolutely without any restriction. Then because there's no such thing as such independent thinking anyway. Because without any restriction means you become restricted by the laws of nature. Restriction is there. So Independent thinking means within the guidelines given by Shastra. Within the guidelines given by Shastra means one should think, not simply repeat the Shastra in a parrot-like fashion, or follow the rules and regulations within the Shastra without any proper understanding. That's why the king sees through his ministers. Because the ministers, they're thoughtful people. One thing is they minister, they should know Shastra, and they're thoughtful, they know the spirit of the law, not simply the law. How to apply that. The whole message of Shastra is to surrender to Krishna. You see that when Prabhupada went to the West, he didn't introduce all the laws immediately. Otherwise, he didn't even follow them all himself because he was not in a position to go into the West. There was meat in the fridge where he was staying. He kept feeding the cat. Later on, of course, Prabhupada would have never accepted such a situation, or even previously. But coming to the West, he wanted to stay and preach. There was no one else willing to help him at the time. So he had to accept such a condition for the higher purpose of preaching Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, the arti, the deity worship, there was no arti, there was no pujari. The first deity Prabhupada had for public worship in the West, Jagannath. Simply devotees, what these means, they were hippies who were just chanting Hare Krishna, just becoming devotees. They would bring one candle and offer it. That was it. So Prabhupada understood the purpose of Shastra, that as stated by Rupa Goswami, Sara Vidhi Nishedasya Etaya Eva Kingaraha. That one should, all the rules and regulations of Krishna, of Shastra, are meant for somehow or other thinking of Krishna. So rules and regulations, first of all we have to bring people to some idea of Krishna consciousness, then rules and regulations can be introduced. So Brahmana by nature, independently thinking, that means within the understanding of Shastra. Once he goes outside the understanding of Shastra, then he's not considered a Brahmana. Then he's outside the Vedic culture, then he's Chanda, that's all. So Brahmana is independent by nature because he has knowledge, the tendency to cultivate knowledge. So the tendency is because he has that, he doesn't feel very much like serving anyone. That's why in Indian culture, to serve someone, that's considered not very good. That's for Shudras and women. They serve others. Means those who are not very much elevated in knowledge, they serve others. But one who has more knowledge, they can do some business, or they can control others as a Kshatriya. Or as a Brahmana, then they remain independent. They don't become dependent on anyone, because then you may become dependent on someone's whims. But he remains financially independent. By leading a poverty-stricken life, he has no demands, he doesn't need anything, only very bare minimum, which others even could not live like that. Brahmana lives in poverty, bare minimum, just whatever he needs. So he's not dependent. Whatever Krishna provides, he accepts. In this way he remains independent, but he is dependent or submissive to the order of Guru, and Guru teaches surrender to Krishna. So independence means one should be independent of the waves of this material world. If you become dependent on someone, you may have to do something you may become involved in acting for their sake rather than acting for Krishna's sake. Or you may become involved in some simple activity that they're involved in, just like Bhishma and Drona were great persons, no doubt, great personalities. But they got involved with the Kauravas, so they had to, they felt it's not proper after they've maintained us for so long that we should fight against them. So they fought against their own principle. They had to compromise their principle by fighting against the Pandavas, even though they knew that Krishna was supporting the Pandavas. They knew Duryodhana was a rascal. They were obliged to fight him because they'd become dependent. That was the fault. Even Bhishma Dev himself said, by accepting maintenance, by becoming wholly and solely maintained by a single person, I became dependent on it. That's why Brahmana maintains his independence. He just accepts little something from each person, not a lot. He doesn't become dependent. Even a guru shouldn't become dependent upon a rich disciple. That's not good for him. When he becomes this, then the guru becomes the servant of the disciple. He has to, what the disciple wants, he has to do. He has to follow his whim, at least to some extent. So independence is there. That one is independent of this material world, but dependent upon Krishna. He remains as independent of this material world means that we can't be independent, but as much as possible, a brahmana remains aloof from society. Aloof in the sense that he doesn't become directly involved so much, but he can give advice because he's detached. The king has ministers, a religious king has ministers, he sees through their eyes and they see through the eye of Shastra. But they should be brahmanas, practicing brahmanas. That's why a religious king, he keeps real brahmanas, whereas a non-religious king, he keeps chamcha, sikopat, who simply praise him and they think of the best way to maintain their position. Just like Kali Maharaj had Shukracharya as his guru. But Shukracharya had a personal interest that Dali Maharaj will be very opulent by my blessings, and then I'll also be very opulent. But a real brahmana doesn't think like that. Prabhupada gave the example of Chanakya Pandit, who wasn't a Vaishnava, but he was a brahmana, who, even though he was practically directing the whole empire of Chandragupta, he was in a very powerful and influential position, but he was just living in a hut. He was living a very simple life. He was doing for the sake of dharma. He was directing the king for the sake of the benefit of the citizen. But he had no personal interest. That's why he could advise the king to act in such a way that might appear to be against the king's self-interest, but would be for his ultimate self-interest, because he has to direct the king to act according to the principles of dharma. So acting according to the principle of dharma, sometimes that may seem to be against our immediate self-interest. Just like if we're told that now you have to fast on such and such a day, you may think, well, that's not very nice. I was just thinking of all the nice things I could stuff my belly with today, and then I have to fast. But because there's a higher principle involved for our ultimate self-interest, we should fast on this day. So seeing through the eye of Shastra means that we see not just simply what is prayer, what is the immediate apparent self-interest based on sense gratificatory understanding, but what is the shreya, what is the ultimate benefit that we may not see, just like a child doesn't see. What is the use of my going to school? I want to play. Why should I sit in this classroom and study? I want to play. But for his ultimate benefit, that is better. So one who sees through the eye of Shastra, you can understand what is the ultimate benefit. But that seeing, that also has to be upashrutya, seeing through the ears, hearing from acharya. Not simply you read so many books and then you know everything. No, that's not possible. One has to serve also. So service, yes. Service who? To God. Not service simply for the sake of the body, serving someone, doing a job. That's also service. But that doesn't bring self-realization. That brings bondage in this material world. But service to Krishna, that is liberating. Service to Krishna, and that through his devotee, Su-su-su, Shavidhanasya, Vasudeva Katha Ruchihi. By Su-su-sha, this is a word which means the attitude of service. Not just the idea of service, but the attitude of service. So if that is there, then by hearing from acharyas, one can understand Shastra. Otherwise, if one simply reads, you cannot understand. Simply by reading, there may be so many misconceptions. One has to hear and serve, and then if he's blessed, as Krishna is saying the topmost benediction is to see Krishna and his abode. So one has to see that whatever is going on in this world, in the background is Krishna. The vastavik vastu, vedyam vastavam atra vastu. The real point of the Vedic knowledge, or the real entity, the real substance, is Krishna. Everything else, whatever is seen, not in relationship to Krishna, that is simply illusion. Illusory perception, that Krishna will say in his, will be here, yatkati yata chatmani. What is that? Yathabhaso yathatamaha. Whatever is perceived not in relationship to me, that is a misconception. That is like simply a reflection in the darkness. It's some kind of vision, but it's not substantial vision. The real seeing means to see everything in relationship to Krishna. That Krishna will explain. Tadvidyad atmanomaya. Real knowledge means to see everything in relationship with Krishna. Everything perceived outside of a relationship with Krishna. That may appear to be very intelligent, but it's not. Seeing means seeing through Shastra and through Acharya. Guru Sadhu Shastra. That is seeing. By that seeing, we can eventually see Krishna in his abode. Even now we can begin to see. Through Shastra. So, Hare Krishna. There is a description of Golok Vrindavan in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a somewhat detailed description of the Vaikuntha planet. There's a detailed description of Bhoma Vrindavan. Vrindavan has manifested here. Golok Vrindavan has not been elaborately described. It's been described in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Brahma Samhita, and other shastras. How should we remember Krishna? It said that we should think of Krishna. How should we think of Krishna? Well, Arjuna asked this in that he asked Krishna to describe in Bhagavad Gita, how can we perceive you in this material world? And Krishna gave a big long description of how you can see everything in relationship to Krishna, and through his vibhutis, through everything in this material world, especially yad yad vibhuti matsattvam srimad urjitam evava tatta deva avagachatvam mama tejamsa sambhavam. Anything wonderful you see in this world is a representation of Krishna. So this is how Arjuna asked how we can see you in this material world. So Krishna said, you see me through the manifestation of material nature, you see it as a representation of me. So that's one way. You also have the deity form of the Lord. You can meditate on the form of the Lord, meditate on how to serve Him, not only meditate upon how to serve Him, but actually do something in His service. Chant His holy name. So, remembering Krishna means through all the senses, of which the mind is the center. Seeing the form of the Lord, serving the form of the Lord, addressing, decorating, bringing people to see Krishna, speaking to people about Krishna. So all this, Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindaya Vachansi Vankunta Gunanaranami Karaya Karo Haya Mandira Mahajina Vishu, etc. There's a whole description of how Ambarish Maharaj engaged his hands in cleaning the temple of the Lord, his mind in thinking of the Lord, his words in speaking of the Lord. So it's an all-around program. It's not simply that sit and meditate on the Lord. Yes? You can do that. All the activities of the senses should be engaged. And then smaran loka, remembrance loka. But especially kirtan is recommended. Kirtan by chanting and by preaching. That's Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur's recommendation. Kirtan Pradhave Smarana Haibe. By the power of, or the strength that is gained from chanting and preaching, then remembrance will come. Especially that's recommended. All other processes are there. Is it not Bhagavan relation? Yes, worship of Narayana in Vaikuntha, this is not Brahma Upasana. It's not impersonal. It's not. You're asking the question, I'm giving the answer. If you allow me, I mean, do you just want yes or no? Yes, alright, yes. Vishnu is Bhagavan. Who said he's not Bhagavan? Who's preaching? He's not devotee. Vishnu is Bhagavan. You didn't know, you don't know this from reading Gita, Bhagavatam. Stand this here. Vishnu is Bhagavan. His body. You sure? You sure? How do you know? You realize it. What if tomorrow you realize that you are the body? What will you do then? How do you know from Shastra? Yeah. So you should understand from Shastra, which just like we're not the body is repeated in Shastra again and again. So that Vishnu is Bhagavan is repeated in Shastra again and again. You should know this. There are many misconceptions. The whole world is full of them. We're all here due to so many misconceptions. There are many, many, many misconceptions. What is the meaning of offering obeisances to the feet? It's an act of submission. That one prostrates himself to the Guru, it means I'm taking the lower position, the humble position. Otherwise you'll see friends when they meet, they may clap each other on the back. They act in a very familiar way. But that's not with Guru. It's always a relationship of submission. So that is symbolic of one's submission, not only symbolic, not only writing in a letter, but you actually have to get down on the ground and put your head down. So you have to do something, you have to show. People may not like to show. In the Western countries, people don't like it very much. They want to bow down to another called kowtow. I think they took the word from Japanese. The whole thing, because in Japanese culture also, I don't think it's fully bowing down, but on the ground, putting the head down. So, especially in modern American culture or way of life, there's the idea that you shouldn't bow down to anyone. You should just be strong and bold and tough. Don't bow down to anyone. On top, show that I'm in control. But this is foolishness, because we're not in control. Ontologically and axiomatically, you probably don't understand either of those words. We are not in control. The bowing down means that we accept, I'm not in control. I'm controlled. So I accept that I'm submissive before God, and God has said that we should bow down to the Guru, so I'm accepting that. So one actually has to do that, show some submission. That is pleasing to Krishna. Even here I saw this Nrsingha was just leaving now. He bowed down, put his head on the feet as he was leaving. One girl was sitting there. She looked shocked. Huh? What is this? He probably never saw him. I don't know. She's what, 16, 17 years old. He probably didn't see like that. In Delhi, you'll still see a lot, isn't it? The Punjab people, they do that. Even they're from rich, but even they're modern and everything. Still they do that. Whatever else Punjabis may not do, still they do that. But here, it's, I don't think children here touch the children their parents speak. Eh? That's long out of fashion. Even in the previous generation, they're not doing it. Were you ever trained to do that? Did you ever see anyone do that? Did you ever see in your childhood that they used to touch the parents' feet? Saurashtra, more. You're from Saurashtra, yeah. Kerala district, no, they're all Kerala district Patels. We're not only Patels, but we're Kerala district Patels. Now it's Anand district, separately. So why? We don't hear, but on top we're top people in the world. You see, even in England, we're controlling the business. Even the Western people, we're controlling them. So it may not be. But that's a foolishness. Janmaishwarya Shuta Shribhir Edamana Mada Puman. Mada means to dry it. All this material, wealth, so called education, bodily beauty, it just makes you crazy, that's all. And you can't understand Krishna. So that culture is very good. This one devotee, he was in Dubai, now he's back in Chennai. Mahamani Krishna Das. So he's training in one area when there's a lot of that low class auto rickshaw drivers is there. So he's bringing in all the children and training them in Bhagavad Gita shlokas and some material education also, and teaching them, when you go home, touch your parents' feet. The parents are surprised. We never expected our children. We didn't even do it ourselves to our parents. Maybe because they're from the village. But they're surprised. He's making the parents also into more... Generally, you don't think of an auto rickshaw driver as a very civilized kind of person. They're mostly, you know... Every person they deal with, they try to cheat, because if they try to extract more money, because if they do that, then if they don't do that, then their income will be much less. So they try to get as much as they can from everybody. They're like a despised kind of people. People don't like auto rickshaws, right? And they get money and they drink, mostly. But he's civilizing them through the children. The children go home. Come and touch their feet, and then they come. Who has taught them this? We couldn't teach them. All we do is just slap the children and start screaming. Just give them a couple of slaps, and they scream more and become more frustrated. Then you go and drink some more, and then you come back and beat the kids more. Children are coming and touching. Very surprised. So they come to say, "Who is this person who's teaching us?" They come submissively. Who is this person who's teaching us? Children to touch our feet. This is very nice. And then they become submissive to him. And then they give up bad habits and so many things. There's so much value in this culture. Because they keep submissive, and then the children, they're submissive to the parents. But the parents, they also have to behave very properly. Otherwise, why are the children going to be submissive? If the parents themselves are having affairs with other people's wives and this and that, then why are the children going to be submissive? But if they're simply watching all rubbish TV, nonsense things, then why should the children respect them? All these things go together. The children, they should do what I say, but simply by force it won't work. If the children see them, why should I follow my parents? They're not worth following. Children are very perceptive. So this is dharma. Adharma bhavat Krishna padushyanti kulastriha. If there's no dharma, then the women become spoiled. Vishu dushtashu varshaya jayate vana sankara. There's no proper culture,
And the women become spoiled, the women become spoiled, and then the children are all nonsense, and then what kind of children they will have. You should.
Prabhupada told, even in America, that Brahmananda, big, strong guy, New Yorker, New York Jew, doesn't listen to anyone, especially to his parents. So when his mother came to John Brahma, said, bow down to your mother. He couldn't imagine such a thing. I mean, even in India, here you can't imagine what to speak of there. But he was so much submissive to Prabhupada, he did it. Mother was surprised, what's going on? He never thought of such a thing.